You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Wednesday, May 10th, 2023. Stranded. Bitcoin mining and ChatGPT can help reduce gas flaring. Wait, what? Published by Housley Carr. Every day, large volumes of associated gas are flared around the world, mostly because there's not enough infrastructure in place to transport the gas to market. This isn't just a colossal waste of energy. Flaring generates a lot of carbon dioxide, or CO2, and, according to a recent study, it's only 91% efficient, on average, at zapping methane, a particularly potent greenhouse gas, or GHG. But what if there was a cost-effective way to beneficially consume the gas that's stranded in remote parts of the Permian, the Bakken and other major production areas? It turns out there is, by using the gas on-site to produce electricity to power portable, modular data centers used to support cryptocurrency mining, artificial intelligence, or AI, programs like ChatGPT, and other high-tech endeavors requiring massive amounts of computation power and energy. In today's RBN blog, we discuss the growing use of stranded natural gas as a power source for middle-of-nowhere data centers. Crude oil-focused producers have been flaring gas in the U.S. since the first oil was produced in western Pennsylvania more than 160 years ago. Back in the day, flaring seemed to make perfect sense. At the time, no one really thought about the environmental fallout. After all, there was no infrastructure in place to transport and process the volatile associated gas that emerged from wells with oil. The controlled combustion of the gas on-site made oil production much safer. Over time, if wells in a production area not too far from civilization were producing large volumes of associated gas, it made economic sense to develop gas gathering systems and larger diameter pipelines to deliver the gas to market. Still, gas flaring continued though to a somewhat lesser degree, both for safety and economic reasons. Sometimes the gas volumes produced were too small to justify the cost of developing processing and takeaway infrastructure, and sometimes gathering and takeaway projects faced delays in securing rights of way or permits. During the shale era, vast amounts of gas were flared in some areas, especially the Bakken, but elsewhere too, as producers and midstreamers struggled to keep up with infrastructure needs. In 2011 and again in 2014, more than one-third of North Dakota's produced gas was flared, spurring the state to implement rules that led to a steady ratcheting down in flared volumes to where it stands today at less than 5%. Flaring is an even more serious issue globally. The World Bank said in a March report that an astounding 139 billion cubic meters, 4.9 trillion cubic feet, or 13.4 BCF per day of natural gas was flared by the global oil and gas industry in 2022, enough to power all of sub-Saharan Africa. This flaring released an estimated 357 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent, 315 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent of it in the form of CO2 and 42 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent in the form of methane. As we've blogged about often, see our recent It Don't Come Easy and Cover Me blog series, there's a big push on in the U.S. and globally to reduce GHG emissions, with a special focus on both CO2, because of the gargantuan volumes involved, and methane, because of its heat-trapping potency. And that spurred broad efforts to eliminate all routine, non-emergency or non-safety-related flaring of natural gas by 2030, if not sooner. The U.S. and more than 30 other countries have agreed to work toward that target, as have more than 50 large oil and gas companies. In many ways, eliminating routine gas flaring is easier said than done. It requires either that gas gathering systems be extended to each and every crude oil-focused well, or that producers find an economic way to make full use of their associated gas on-site. In some cases, associated gas can be reinjected into wells. In the past couple of years, an increasing number of E&Ps have been diverting at least a portion of the gas they had been flaring to produce electricity for the drilling, completion, and other equipment they, or oilfield service companies, operate on site. While that may help, it's typically only a partial fix. Producers often have large volumes of stranded gas to deal with, and that's where on-site power generation for portable data centers comes into play. Many activities in the new world we live in, cryptocurrency mining, AI, cloud computing, video gaming, etc., require previously unthinkable amounts of high-performance computing, and the data centers that do that computing demand a lot of energy. According to the Department of Energy, or DOE, the more than 2,500 data centers currently operating in the U.S. account for more than 2% of domestic electricity use, and that share is expected to triple or quadruple by the end of this decade. Many of these data centers are sprawling facilities, millions of square feet each, located in and around high-tech areas like Silicon Valley, Northern Virginia, New York, New Jersey, Austin, and Dallas. Others are smaller and scattered more broadly. Satellites and high-speed data transmission networks make location almost irrelevant, while still others, the kind we'll be discussing today, are small enough to fit within modular steel containers that can be tractor-trailered to and set up at remote sites like, say, an oil and gas production area in western North Dakota, West Texas, or Weld County, Colorado. To power these facilities, gas-fired generator sets are trucked in as well. The generators are fueled by, you guessed it, stranded gas produced at nearby well pads. The out-front leader in this unusual space is Crusoe Energy, which to date has deployed more than 120 modular data centers across various U.S. shale production basins. A significant portion of these installations can be found in the Rockies area, encompassing North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and Utah. We understand that Crusoe is currently engaged in negotiations to expand its operations into the Permian Basin, as well as extending its reach to South America and the Middle East/North Africa MENA region. Crusoe's patented Digital Flaring Mitigation, or DFM, program provides what the privately held company calls a plug-and-play gas capture service that is commercially structured as a modified gas purchase agreement. Under that arrangement, Crusoe secures the air permit for the generator or generators, then installs and operates them at no cost to the E&P. Our understanding is that generator mobilization, installation, and commissioning takes about a week. The 2-megawatt, or MW, Waukesha generator sets used in Crusoe's DFM projects are designed to handle associated gas with a wide range of BTUs content, anything from superdry, 900 BTU per cubic feet gas to super-rich, NGL-saturated gas with an energy content of up to 2,500 BTU per cubic feet. The generators can also deal with gas delivered at a pressure of between 50 and 125 pounds per inch 2 or psi, and with a hydrogen sulfide, or H2S, content of up to 150 parts per million, or ppm. The H2S limit suggests that gas pretreating may be needed for many sites in the Permian, where, as we discussed in Dark Horse, more than 85% of the gas streams are H2S rich, more than 100 ppm, and more than 40% are extremely rich in H2S, more than 10,000 ppm. Crusoe also offers what it calls an NGL and DFM solution, under which most of the NGLs in rich gas are stripped out and stored before the resulting drier gas is consumed by the generators. Most often, generators and data centers are deployed to a well pad with multiple wells, but Crusoe can also work with the producer on the design of a small, infield gathering system to aggregate gas from multiple pads to a central delivery point near the DFM project's generators. The stranded gas for the generator, or, more commonly, multiple generators, is purchased for either a fixed fee, in dollar per thousand cubic feet, or a variable fee under which the dollar per thousand cubic feet rate is tied to one or more variables. To establish a basis for royalty and tax payments, the custody transfer for the gas occurs at the delivery point where the gas is metered and purchased. The modular data centers are, in essence, Lilliputian versions of their much larger brethren. See what we did there? Robinson Crusoe, Gulliver's Travels, Lilliput, Lilliputian. The centers are fitted with security access controls, dustproof vestibules and fire suppression systems, as well as hundreds of application-specific integrated circuits, or ASICs, for cryptocurrency mining. In addition to ASICs, Crusoe also utilizes state-of-the-art NVIDIA GPUs, which are dedicated to their proprietary cloud computing network, Crusoe Cloud. Clients of Crusoe Cloud can acquire computing time for tasks such as high-performance computing, graphics rendering, and deep learning and machine learning models. The generation capacity at Crusoe's DFM sites range from 2 megawatts to 34 megawatts, and the company's entire fleet of generators in operation and on order totals more than 240 megawatts. Gas consumption at the largest project, or 34 megawatts, averages over 5 million cubic feet per day, or enough to sharply reduce the amount of gas that needs to be flared at the site. As for the environmental impact of using stranded gas to generate on-site power for computation rather than flaring the gas, it's enormous, in part because the generators being used operate with a methane zapping efficiency of more than 99.9%. For a Crusoe DFM project consuming 1.8 million cubic feet per day of 1,500 BTU per cubic feet rich gas, methane emissions are reduced by about 99% compared to flaring, and CO2e emissions are reduced by about 70%. Other players in this space include Canada's Validus Power and Norway's Earth Wind and Power, the latter's name a not-so-subtle play on the legendary American band Earth Wind and Fire. We acknowledge that using stranded associated gas to fuel generators that power modular data centers may not be the only way to address the environmental issues surrounding gas flaring, but it would be hard to argue with the view that it's an innovative approach that makes practical and, apparently, economic use of gas that would otherwise be simply burned off. There's no doubt that the world will continue to need more and more computing power, and if putting stranded gas to good use helps support that, so much the better, right? Stranded was written by Jamie Kyle and Jeff Harrington. It appears as the 10th song on Heart's 10th studio album, Brigade. Released as a single in September 1990, it went to number 13 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. The lead vocal on the song was sung by Nancy Wilson, and the video for the power ballad features live tour footage and many scenes of her walking alone. Heart guitarist Howard Leese makes an appearance during the guitar solo section, and one must ponder who had the highest hair in the video, Nancy or Howard. Only the purple cans of Extra Hold Aqua Net know for sure. Personnel on the record were Nancy Wilson, lead vocal, guitars, keyboards, and Wilson, backing vocals, Howard Leese, guitars, keyboards, backing vocals, Mark Andes, bass, backing vocals, Danny Carmassi, drums, Kim Bullard, keyboards, and Richie Zito, guitars. Brigade was recorded in late 1989 at One-on-One Recording Studios in North Hollywood and A&M Studios in Hollywood, with Richie Zito producing. The album was released in March 1990 and went to number 3 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. 4 singles were released from the LP. This album was made at the peak of the mid-1980s to early 90s run of album-oriented rock, AOR, power ballad hits for Heart. Many of the tunes on the album were written by outside writers with a focus on commercial radio success. It's hard to believe this was the same band that had delivered hard rock hits such as Barracuda early on in their career. In the same way, Jefferson Airplane, the band that brought you Crown of Creation, evolved into one that delivered We Built This City, with similar financial gains. Brigade was certified 2X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. MTV loved Heart and they sold millions of records during this period. Heart is an American rock band formed in Seattle in 1973 by Roger Fisher and Steve Fasson. When they joined up with sisters Anne and Nancy Wilson, Michael Derisier, and Howard Leese, the band had 1970s hits mixing hard rock with folk music. By 1982, Fisher, Fosen, and Derisier had left and the band established a new popularity with a focus on power ballads and softer music. They disbanded in 1998 but have regrouped several times, with the Wilson sisters being the only consistent members. With the release of the album Jupiter Darling in 2004, the band returned to Heart's earlier hard rock roots. They have released 15 studio albums, 9 live albums, 9 compilation albums, and 64 singles, and have sold more than 35 million records worldwide. Heart was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in April 2013. 27 members have passed through the band since its formation. Heart, fronted by Anne and Nancy Wilson, continues to tour.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.